Hello and welcome to The Hardy Brain, the show that takes athletic, introverted entrepreneurs and leaders and transforms them into ironclad brain performers. I'm your host, Dr. David Hardy. And today on our show, we've got another amazing guest. He is an entrepreneur scientist, co-founder, chief science officer, and head of clinical research at Viome Life Sciences, and is on a mission to improve humanity by focusing on building a healthier future in which chronic diseases and cancer will be described in the history books. Welcome to the show, Dr. Momo Fuyi-ish. I know I butchered the last name and my apologies, but it is great to have you on the show, Momo.
Happy to be here.
Excellent. Well, how are you going to get rid of chronic diseases, which are just epidemic, and cancer?
Well, I'd like to draw first a little comparison, because if you've read the history, you know that about a third of the world's population died during the Black Plague outbreaks in the 13th and 14th centuries. And at that time, the humanity simply didn't know what was causing it, how it was transmitted, didn't know anything about it. And so at that point in time, if you lived then, you had a third of a chance to die. Today, we obviously just read about the Black Plague outbreaks in history books, and we say, wow, you know, I can't believe that this happened. Today, you don't wake up and worry about the Black Plague. You know what causes it. You know how it's transmitted. You know how to prevent it. And we don't get Black Plague because we understand it. With chronic diseases and cancers, they are far more complex than a single pathogen causing a disease. So it's not as easy to understand. But today, not in 10 years, not in 20 years, but today, the world possesses 100% of science and technology needed to understand the root causes of every single chronic disease and every single cancer. And we can learn how to prevent them, so that we can literally, in a few years, describe IBD in history books and say, wow, there was this disease, IBD, that existed, and now we know exactly what triggers it. We know how to prevent it. No one has it. It's just going to be an interesting story. We have all that. However,
no one has. We've got all this knowledge on what causes chronic diseases and cancer, and yet that knowledge isn't out there, is it?
No, we have the technology. We don't yet have the knowledge. We have bits and pieces of knowledge. All I'm saying is we have the technology. If the bigger powers decided today that we want to understand exactly the root causes of Alzheimer's and put Alzheimer's in history books, we can start working on that project today. And in a few years, depending on how focused the project is, we can literally figure out all root causes of Alzheimer's and find out ways to prevent it. And so I actually wrote an article about this that's currently under peer review, which talks about how we should apply the Manhattan Project principles to solving these big problems in science. Manhattan Project took place in 1940s, and it basically gathered the world's best scientists, and it gave them one goal. There were no goals to publish papers. There were no goals to progress from associate professor to full professor. There were no goals to put drugs out on the market. There was only one goal for the entire 100,000 people. And if we apply that principle today, we can also solve all these chronic disease and cancer problems. The problem is that academia are fractured. They don't have that principle. Every academic has their own method, has their own questions, has their own little playground. And so they don't work together to solve the big problem. And in pharma, pharma's business model is not to prevent diseases. No one will give pharma any money to go and prevent diseases, because a cured patient is a lost customer. How are you going to make the bundles of money that you're making today, right? I mean, if you look at the selling drug in the world today, maybe not today after the GLP drugs, but before that, the biologics for suppressing the immune system for arthritis-like diseases, you know, Humira and other biologics, they have been for the last 20 years best-selling drugs. If you learn how to cure or prevent your arthritis, then you're no longer a customer. You're no longer, you know, contributing to the healthcare system. And so the population thinks of academia and pharma as improving healthcare, when in fact, that is not their focus.
Not and so it's one sort bit. Of a, and you had mentioned the powers that be as well. How would it not be in their focus to cure these? They need things that create panic, don't they?
Yeah. So that's what. Well, I mean, look, this is a very complex issue. Today, yes. $4.1 trillion in the United States changes hands in the healthcare industry, and it employs millions of people. If you were in 10 years to say, well, we no longer have chronic diseases or cancers, that's going to have a huge impact on the society. And many Massive. People who benefit from this healthcare, they don't want that to happen. But I don't think that that's really the problem. I honestly don't think that's the problem. I think the problem is simply that we have a system that's established, academia and pharma. They have certain incentives. Academics have an incentive to publish papers. They have no incentive. No academic is judged by how many people have you helped live better lives in your career. When they have a retirement party, that never comes up. It always is how many papers have they published, right? And yeah. So they have no incentive. An academic doesn't think, hey, how can my research be helpful to humanity? They don't think that because they're not incentivized by that. And pharma, like I said, they are definitely not thinking that because no one's going to pay for that. So that's one unique thing that I thought about back in, 2000s and decided to create an entity, which is now Viome Life Sciences, whose business model is to maintain health. That is our business model. And our business model is to monetize on people, keeping people healthy. Now, it's not going to be necessarily the level of monetization that academia get and pharma get, but that's okay. Once you live a good life, any money beyond that is pointless. And so it doesn't really, you don't have to be insanely rich. You can be rich in many other ways.
On that point though, there are established business models on this in the fitness industry and the alternative health diet, nutrition world to keep people healthy. And it is a yes. battle to keep people healthy because there's so many things that stressors, poor diet, poor nutrition, all sorts of things that can obviously decrease somebody's health. And yes. How does this kind of apply then? And this could be something that impacts all billions of people on the planet then.
Yeah, so I think that that's a fundamentally different concept from gyms and nutritionists and all other small entities that try to help people live better lives and us. We've created a platform that we call VIOS. So instead of iOS, it's VIOS, Viome Operating System, which is basically a globally scalable platform that is 100% science and data-based that copies nature. So fundamentally, if you look around in blue zones, you can find today tens of thousands of people who live well into their 90s and even past 100 who have no symptoms of mental, cognitive, or physical illness. They have no symptoms, right? They have never seen a doctor in their life. They have never taken a pharmaceutical in their life. And so nature has already figured out, and this is really the main takeaway I would say from this entire conversation, is that nature has already figured out how to keep us healthy in every aspect for a very long time until at some point in time, your immune system obviously slows down as well until at some point in time, you get a pneumonia and you die. But until that point, you're healthy and you're functional and you can enjoy your life even in your 90s. I had conversations with 6 people on a Greek island in their 90s, and they were cheerful, right? Like their 20s. They were walking around. They were doing things. It's an incredible thing. That doesn't exist in modern society. That just doesn't exist. And so nature has figured it out, and all we are doing is copying nature. We're figuring out what is it that keeps people healthy and what is it that makes people sick, and how can we use nature, which is just nutrition. So Viome Life Sciences is all about nutrition. We make no attempt to produce pharmaceuticals. We simply tune the nutrition of every single person to empower them to live that life with nothing but grocery store items and supplements that you can buy at any grocery store. So that's really the fundamental concept, that it's scalable to the global population. And when we show in randomized controlled trials that if you invest in someone's health X dollars, you will actually save 10X or 100X dollars in their lifetime. When we show that with health economic models, then whoever is paying for your healthcare is gonna pay for this sort of approach for you from birth to death. So I imagine that in Canada and the UK and Australia and all these nationalized healthcare systems, when they see our health economic models, they will basically give our services for free to their citizens, knowing that overall healthcare costs will decrease. And this is what has been talked about for the last 20 years. You know, if, you know, in the UK, they have entire conferences where they talk about the urgent need for preventive medicine, but it doesn't exist yet.
Right.
And that's what we're bringing up.
No, it seems like even in nationalized healthcare systems that the word prevention is almost a swear word, because it is based on the old model that you have mentioned here. And it's very hard to get people who are entrained, entrenched in that model to make those changes. How do you see that kind of unfolding? Because we are kind of at the point of disruption with healthcare, because we know it just does not work for the vast majority of citizens. It's expensive and it's close to bankrupting a lot of institutions.
Yeah. I mean, I compare the transformation in healthcare today the same way that we transformed film cameras into digital cameras, and the same way that gasoline cars are transforming into electric cars. And so if you look back, you know, in the late 90s when the first digital cameras came out, you know, film enthusiasts were all, well, this is just crap. The battery dies in 2 minutes. You know, the resolution is poor. It's ugly. It's got limited capabilities. This is never going to work, right? Five years later, a typical DSLR that Canon and Nikon came out were so clearly better than the top of the line film cameras. You couldn't sell a film camera on eBay anymore. The camera that was basically, you know, the Ferrari or the Lamborghini of film cameras, it no longer had any value. And the entire population jumped ship from film to digital. It wasn't something that was forced. It wasn't something that Kodak could have prevented. It's simply a disruptive technology showed up. It was so vastly better, and the entire world jumped on it. And that's exactly what we need to do today with healthcare. We need to create a disruptive technology. And there are many companies that are doing that with, you know, AI image analysis and with at-home testing and with better diagnoses, automated diagnoses, all that. So the transformation has happened. Of course, it's easier to transform digital film cameras into digital cameras than it is to transform a healthcare system, right? The complexity is vastly, vastly greater. So it's not going to take 3 to 5 years. It's going to take maybe 10 to 15 years. But the revolution is happening. And the drivers of the revolution are technologies that enable it, first of all. Second of all, I think people are sick and tired of today's healthcare. People are sick and tired of it. In Canada, probably you guys have different problems than we do in the US, but in the US, runarounds, opinions, bills. You go to a hospital to get some routine surgery in the US and you get 20 bills and you call these people and they're like, you're like, you guys haven't touched me. Oh, they're like, well, we have an office in that building and we processed some paperwork. So boom, $300, right?
Yeah, there's exactly.
So much running around and so much pain and suffering that people with chronic diseases are experiencing on the administrative side and the healthcare side. They're just sick and tired of it. They're seeking alternative solutions, which is why we have so many different alternative solutions. So anyway, that's a long story. Let's talk about the solutions.
It's a great story. And on top of that, though, like, since we are talking about disruption and basically a changeover from one system to a new system, you also mentioned that what you want to do is basically make health available in the grocery stores. Now, how does this kind of interplay with our food supply? Because we know that a good vast majority of our food supply, the ultra processed foods, are something that's causing these health issues as well. So how does this kind of interplay with what you're doing at Viome and what you're actually looking at to guide nutrition and health style?
Great question. So So this is all going to have to be stepwise. You can't boil the ocean all at once, right? So stepwise, we first have to develop the technology that we can prove can prevent chronic diseases and cancers. That is the first step. Without that, no one's going to change their diet in a significant way, right? Second step will be behavioral science integration. And so our app, for example, from its inception, has had a chatbot. And we currently use that chatbot, for example, for our randomized control trials. But soon we're going to implement that chatbot for our customers. And that chatbot will be sort of like Alexa, where you can ask it different things like, hey, I'm going to a restaurant. Here are the options. What should I eat? Or tonight I want to cook Thai food with chicken. Give me a recipe. What do I need to buy at the grocery store? It will be, you know, I'm at a party and here are my choices. What should I eat? Or, you know, what type of exercise should I be doing today? Or, you know, I got 6 hours of sleep last night. What should I do tonight? Things like that. So it will be basically a personalized, highly personalized coach that will learn your behavior and your psychology. And it will either nag you, or it'll scare you, or it'll simply professionally remind you of what you need to be doing in order to improve your health. And then it'll interpret the results for you as well every time you do a set of testing. So our tests combine stool, blood, and saliva, and you get about 20,000 data points currently from those three tests. But that'll climb to 100,000 in the next few years, and then eventually 1 million data points. And when you get 1 million data points, of course, today you go to get a panel done at a doctor and you get between 4 and 30, let's say, data points. And the right. doctor can review it's those in, you know, a few minutes, right? But when we get to 1 million data points of your body, then you'll need really good digestible summary that AI will provide for you and tell you only where the weaknesses are in your body and what you need to focus on and keep basically managing your lifestyle 24 hours a day and enable you to make good decisions about your life. So when right. we have that
now,
system.
On these data points, though, just to kind of rewind here, you've got blood, stool, saliva. All right. What are you looking for in each one of those? What are kind of the broad categories of data points that you're looking for, and how are yeah. they triangulated then?
Yeah. So first of all, we're looking for the exact same data in all three samples. So our robots do not know whether they're processing stool, blood, or saliva. It's the exact same method. The method is called metatranscriptomics, and it's a complex word, but meta just means a mixture. Transcriptome is a collection of all transcripts, and omics just means that we're analyzing the transcriptome. And so let's talk about the transcriptome. Transcriptome is just a scientific word for RNA molecules. And RNA is really a key molecule in our body. And so I'll just contrast that with DNA. So the Genome Project back in the 1990s promised that once we sequence the human genome, we'll be able to solve all problems, right? All
right,
health problems.
All of them.
Not only has that not happened, but our chronic disease burden today is higher than it was when we solved the Human Genome Project. And so clearly, genetics does not play a significant role in chronic diseases and cancers. And that has now come out in the peer-reviewed literature that genetics in very large genetically identical twin studies, genetics has been shown to play a minor role in the onset and progression of chronic diseases and cancers. And so now we know that genetics is not the answer. Why does the world still continue to analyze DNA? It's because it's a very easy analysis. You can get DNA sequenced anywhere. You can preserve it because it's so stable. And we have sort of a consumerized saying that DNA is the same when you're born. It's the same when you're 45 when you're healthy. And it's the same when you're 55 when you've developed some chronic disease. And then you die. And then 10,000 years later, someone swabs a piece of your bone, analyzes it, and it's the same DNA, and you've been dead for 10,000 years. How can that
right.
help me prevent
exactly.
chronic disease?
It
can't, and it hasn't.
It can't.
And so there are obviously genetic contributions to diseases, and there are some ways that you can harness that contribution with some drugs and so on. But for the most part, chronic disease and cancers are not genetic diseases. There are a few, and they're called rare genetic diseases, and those can be now cured with CRISPR-Cas. But going back to DNA versus RNA, RNA is the functional arm of DNA. So DNA is a physical object that sits in every cell and doesn't do anything. It can be there for a million years and not do anything. And so it's really a static object that has a potential. But that potential is realized when it's copied into RNA. RNA is the function. It's the motor. It's the thing that actually performs the function. And so if we look at, for example, a very specific example, you have an IBD patient who one day is in remission, and then a month later, they're in a flare. And you look at the DNA in remission and flare. You look at the DNA of the microbiome. You look at the DNA of the human. The DNA of the human obviously hasn't changed in that month in any appreciable way, right? So it's the same DNA. So, I mean, the person is sick one day and healthy another day, and their DNA is the same. So how can DNA have contributed to that? If you look at the microbiome, it's the same story. You have the same microbes in a remission and flare. So if you do DNA analysis, you'll find out, well, these are the same microbes. But if you look at RNA on both the microbiome side and the human side, they're vastly different. And that's because different genes have now become active. And the activation of specific genes is what makes people healthy and what makes people sick. And that's why from the beginning of my journey, I have focused on RNA, not DNA, because I already knew from my scientific background that DNA is not going to be the solution. And so that's what we focus on at Viome. On both human side and the microbial side, to answer your question in a very long way, we analyze and quantify, we identify and quantify all RNA molecules that are contributed to saliva, stool, and blood. And that includes human cells and microbial cells. And when I say microbial cells, that includes all microbes, bacteria, bacteriophages, archaea, fungi, molds, yeast, any kind of virus, all of those are a part of the microbiome. And all of those contribute to human health and disease. And then human cells, of course, for example, if you take IBD, the human cells that are shed in our stool, they're shed to the tune of billions of cells every single day. And they're very different profiles. They're obviously every single human cell has the exact same DNA, the one you inherited from your parents. And so if you sequence the human DNA in IBD patients during remission and relapse in stool, it's the same DNA. But if you sequence RNA, it's vastly different. And we just need to publish that. And the same on the microbiome side.
Right. Now with this, RNA is kind of the expression of what's happening, but DNA analogy could be used that it's the instruction manual for several different things. And it's very dynamic how it's used. So obviously different gene expressions are going to be kind of heightened or lowered depending on what's occurring. Now, what's occurring can be obviously chemical and can also be energy-wise. Can you kind of speak to the differences of both of those and the interconnectedness of it as well?
Well, I think those two are completely combined. If you think of the human body as a million chemical reactions going on at the same time, that's basically what we are. We are a vessel with a million chemical reactions. And these chemical reactions are performed by enzymes. And there are some chemicals that are just interacting with each other without enzymes, but that's, I would say, minority. And so human enzymes...
But with these, enzymes speed up or slow down a reaction depending on kind of the energy that's needed to produce that reaction. Am I correct on that?
Yeah, well, let me explain. So living organisms, living cells need energy to live, and that energy is derived from what we call substrates. And then through the chemical reaction of processing substrates into products, we harvest that energy to get ATP, for example. ATP is a unit of energy. So let me give you the most simplified example I can think about. If you make beer, you're going to have two components. You're going to have barley and you're going to have yeast. Right. As soon as the yeast sees barley, it says, whoa, there is energy here. It's going to express the genes that are needed to process barley. And remember, the keyword is express. Those genes were just genes. They were just static objects. It's going to actually produce RNA that will digest barley outside the cell, bring the components of barley into the cell, and then process them into ethanol. And at every single step or at several of those steps, it'll harvest the energy from those chemical reactions.
And absolutely, but the conditions need to be controlled, the temperature and kind of the speed at which it's processed as well.
Well,
so there is a combination. And to kind of use the cooking analogy, you've got the chemicals. You can put them into a mixed pot or whatever else, but it still needs to react to being cooked. And kind of same in the body, correct?
Yeah, I mean, that one of the reasons we have temperature control in our body 37 is that we've also evolved all of our enzymes to be most efficient at 37, right? But
it goes beyond just temperature.
It goes beyond temperature, exactly. But it's basically very simple. If you produce if you have an enzyme that's produced from a gene and you give it a substrate, within a temperature range, it will produce a product. It doesn't really need it. Well, sometimes it needs cofactors, which are typically vitamins, but many other cofactors. Supplements are typically cofactors. So we are basically chemical reactions that are harvesting energy by converting a substrate into a product. And I want to linger on this for just a second, because that's exactly how we modulate the human body by introducing foods that contain molecular ingredients that are going to support healthy chemical reactions. And we withdraw foods from a person whose molecular ingredients will support production of chemicals that are bad for that person. It's basically, that's the concept. And so if you look at a very simplified version, for example, where if I eat an apple, my body will process the carbohydrates in that apple and spike my blood sugar. Actually, persimmons is the worst case for me. If I eat persimmons, my blood sugar will spike very hotly. And so my app tells me, do not eat persimmons because your blood sugar is going to go sky high. But if I eat sweet potatoes, my blood sugars will stay very low. And with my wife, she can eat some persimmons, but she cannot have sweet potatoes. And so with sweet potatoes will spike her blood sugar very highly. And the Viome app will tell her that. And so we can now identify exactly what foods trigger specific physiological phenomena that are actually bad for us, and then avoid those foods. And we can also identify foods that are good for us and consume those. And we can do that for every single person. Nature has already figured all this out, so we're just following it.
Absolutely. So what other kind of things happen seasonality then with diet as well? Because it is dynamic. Like if we were to just mimic nature, there's different seasons and then there's different kind of food sources during different times of year. And I think that's kind of shown in a lot of the blue zones as well. How does the testing you're doing kind of relate to this, and how dynamic is it in that aspect as well?
Yeah. So yes, there have been publications showing that in, for example, some African tribes, the microbiome changes due to the food changes seasonally. The key takeaways are that in modern society, we don't have seasons anymore. You can buy tomatoes all year long. You can buy essentially any item all season long. And until we need to change foods, we don't need to basically do anything until we need to change foods. Eventually, I think it's possible that we will incorporate seasonality into our recommendations. But here's the thing. Our current recommendations give you a list of something like 200 to 300 foods to enjoy on a daily basis. And so you can, in fact, go to a country that follows seasonality. And in every season, you can still have quite a large variety of foods that are available in that time of year. But you should still avoid foods that your microbiome will convert into something that's bad for you. So our approach still follows that. That's not a problem at all. I just think that in modern society, we will find ways to produce all foods at all times, especially with new agricultural methods. But that is true that in the past, there's been a seasonality, and the microbiome basically adjusts. Even though you have the same microbiome composition, there will be some shifts in the abundances of some microbes due to new foods, but the output, the biochemical output of that microbiome will essentially be the same, beneficial to you during all seasons, because you've adapted to that sort of environment.
Right. So a lot of this is going to be the maintenance of the system, the health, day-to-day, diet, meal-to-meal. How does this translate then into cancers, chronic diseases for the person who obviously is unaware of that connection?
Yeah. So if this is all hypothetical now, even though we're working out the science in a big way, but when we solve the problems of chronic diseases and cancers, what will happen is that we will say, in a completely data-driven fashion, okay, your microbiome, and only yours, not another person's microbiome, your microbiome will produce specific chemicals that are, let's say, out of 300 different kinds of lipopolysaccharides that are produced by the microbiome, there are, let's say, 10 that your microbiome can produce in response to specific dietary choices that will trigger your immune cells in the intestinal lining to produce cytokines that cause inflammation. That inflammation will now feed a dish or feed additional biochemical pathways in the microbiome that will stimulate even more inflammation. Now you're going to get basically necrosis of the lining, and you're going to start this path of experiencing an IBD flare. And until something dramatically changes in your diet to where you shut down those pathways, you will have a flare. Okay. And we know exactly which foods in you will trigger a flare, which ingredients will trigger a flare. And then you can, map those specific foods. And so all you will have to do is not eat those foods, but there's more. There are other types of LPS that are produced that actually prevent this whole cascade from starting. And you have some microbes that can produce that protective LPS. You also have microbes that can produce butyrate and produce other chemicals that prevent this cascade. And now we're going to figure out which molecular ingredients feed those biochemical pathways. And we're going to ask you to eat those. And as long as you eat those that you're supposed to eat, those foods, and avoid the foods that you're supposed to avoid, you will never experience an IBD flare. It's one of those things like going to the Black Plague. We know exactly what causes it. We know exactly how to prevent it. And we will tell you that so that you can go make your choices on an everyday basis not to do that. There will also be a genetic component where we say, you are not going to get IBD. You're basically protected from IBD because when that cascade launches, your own immune system will know not to escalate it and not to produce the responses that will escalate it. So you don't have to worry about that. But you do have to worry about leaky gut and leaky blood-brain barrier because that will lead to Alzheimer's. So you still have to follow dietary guidelines. I can imagine that there will be no human being that can just eat anything and always stay healthy. That I don't think that you can have.
And on that point, though, eating anything, what is kind of your 5-10 second response to somebody who says, "But I eat healthy," and they think they're eating healthy? And if you look at some of those foods, yeah, they probably are healthy. But
yeah. I mean, eating healthy, I think you can eat healthy today. I think that if you follow one of the diets in the blue zones, which are Okinawan diet, let's say on the East Asian side, and Mediterranean diet in Greek islands or Sardinia and so on, I think those could be considered generally healthy. I can't say that they would be bad for you, but you have to be very careful. For example, we have a health food store here nearby that we live by, basically. We buy most of our groceries there. And if you go to their bread aisle, these are artisan breads locally made by bakeries. There is not a single bread out of maybe 40 different kinds that is made out of whole wheat. Not a single bread. Now, they do have names like wholesome bread and whole wheat bread and whole grain. But if you look at the ingredients list, the very first ingredient is just wheat, the highly processed wheat. And then they have other ingredients, and then they'll say whole wheat right before salt. So they've basically, in a vat of hundreds of pounds of dough, they've like sprinkled some whole wheat, and now they call it wholesome bread. Or they've sprayed some seeds on it, and they're like whole wheat. Not a single one of those breads is actually good for you. Not a single one.
Right.
In a health food store labeled as wholesome bread. And so the drive of people. For example, I talk to people from India and Pakistan, and we discuss these things, that now there's like an epidemic of metabolic diseases in those countries because they're now using highly processed wheat to make flat breads. And even they say, but if I make it out of whole wheat, it just doesn't taste good. So right. I choose to eat the processed wheat because it tastes so good, right? So we are going to have to, install an MPG meter in everyone, meaning we're going to have to give them their data in the app so that they can stretch that MPG. Because if we don't, they're going to be pushing that gas pedal really hard because it's fun, right? And right, so, exactly. So when people say I eat healthy, unless they eat whole food, plant-based diet with a little bit of fish and a little bit of poultry, I would say that you don't know that you're eating healthy. And even then, if you're eating pesticide-ridden, non-organic produce, if you're eating chicken that's been filled with antibiotics, if you're not careful, for example, another example that I really, really despise is sauerkraut. People are told sauerkraut is good for you. It's fermented produce and it's associated with all these health benefits. But if you go to a grocery store and you buy sauerkraut off the shelf, even in the fridge section, what it will have is two preservatives, sodium benzoate and potentially another one, that basically kills the bacteria. And so you're buying sauerkraut thinking you're getting a fermented product with lots of live microorganisms. They may have fermented it, but then they killed them all for shell stability. Not only did they kill them all so you don't get that benefit, you're now consuming that sodium benzoate that's killing your own oral and gut microbiome, so it's doing damage to your body. So it has the opposite effect of what people tell you. So you have to be a super highly informed consumer and read carefully every single thing before you put it in the basket. And we have to train people to think that way. Today, people are tricked by labels. I mean, it's crazy.
It's massively insane. And I like your example of the health food store because, yeah, people have realized they can sell health products for a lot more money and aren't necessarily being ethical behind it.
They're absolutely.
So once you've proven that this is dangerous for people and causes chronic diseases, do you believe that then the shift will happen, or is it going to be gradual with both?
It's going to be gradual, of course. It's going to be gradual. And for example, today, it has been proven that processed wheat is bad for you and that whole wheat is good for you. And yet, finding a product whole wheat is challenging, and customer preferences are heavily biased towards processed wheat, right?
Yeah, and that doesn't even go into the preservatives and fortifying it, everything else that is going to affect the microbiome.
So I think it's going to be a gradual process. There are people who have problems and who want to solve their problems, and those are going to be early adopters. They're going to be data driven. They're going to want to be better. I had an autoimmune disease. I figured out the nutrition that keeps me healthy and cured my disease. I am 100% strict. If I go to a restaurant or a party and I'm not 100% sure that it doesn't have things that are bad for me, I will skip a meal. And I will be very happy about it because I'm very happy when I'm healthy, and I'm very unhappy when I'm sick and have to be in bed and cannot do things. And so the early adopters will be those that have a driver behind it. And then, you know, the wave will change. I mean, and there will be probably eventually laws that you know, guide these things, that you cannot have highly processed wheat on the shelf unless it's labeled as highly processed wheat. Just like today, tobacco and alcohol are labeled as this may hurt you. And, you know, we've done a really good job of reducing tobacco consumption because it's been very well established that it's bad for you.
Now, how many early adopters do you have with Viome? And how do people find out more about you and your company?
Yeah. So we have currently about 600,000 customers in about 100 countries, and we're scaling up now. COVID gave us a sort of a big speed bump, but now we're starting to scale up again. We have two websites. We have sort of a science-oriented viomelifesciences.com, and that's basically the website of our scientific team where we talk about the science and clinical research. We are heavily conducting clinical research research trials. We have enrolled 16,000 clinical research participants in our trials in order to learn how to actually, what is a healthy human body and what is not. The commercial brand of Viome Life Sciences is called Viome, and it's viome.com. And that's where people can buy all of our products and services. So we have tests and we have supplements. And so we have personalized supplements for the gut microbiome. So these are traditional supplements, and then biotics. So probiotics, prebiotics, postbiotics. And we also rolled out last summer lozenges, oral lozenges for modifying the oral microbiome. We're coming out with a personalized toothpaste here in April, which is very exciting to me. And we're going to come out with additional products that are all highly personalized and data-driven, meaning that you don't know what's good for you until you do the test and find out exactly what are the things that need fixing in your microbiome and your body. And then here's a product that can fix it. So we're very data-driven.
I love it. Definitely check out Viome and Dr. Momo, and stay tuned to the next episode of The Hardy Brain, the show that takes athletic, introverted entrepreneurs and leaders and transforms them into ironclad brain performers. Take care.